Rock on the Fire.
Yeah, you guys ought to know this is a special AM edition.
I don't do Saturday mornings very well.
Instead of beer. Well, I can go for a Bloody Mary right about now.
Saturdays is usually get up at about 10:30, have breakfast, go to the bar, and that's 10:30 p.m.
And it's fall in New Jersey today, girls and boys.
Yeah, the reason we're up so early is to accommodate the schedule of today's very special guest. I think out there, you listeners will get a sense of very palpable man love coming from the speakers today because we have our good brother, Michael Lee Nierenberg, in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome aboard, man.
This is, we talked about this, man, but when you put it out there, my first thought was, fucking Saturday morning, man.
How hard is that? How hard is that? Have you had any coffee yet?
No, man, my first real thought was like, it's going to be like, you know,
it's business.
You know, the first thing I really thought of was
getting it by me.
We
had to work on you. I said to the guys, we were texting back and forth. I said, give me 2 weeks to work on Stick.
You do most of your business at night, though, anyway. He's a vampire. Yeah. For those of you out there who don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I used to be, man. I just got old, you know.
So the backstory, you guys all grew up together. I'm the odd man out this week.
Somewhat. I mean, somewhat. Yeah. I mean, we were
aware of each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, these guys are way older than me. They're like way, way older than me.
We're a generation older, for sure.
Wow.
No, I think it's only like seven.
Well, what is it?
Mike
and I are 45.
I'm 38.
I'm 46. I don't know about
I'm
you.
I'm 46.
Yeah, you are 46.
You'll be 46.
All right, 30,
you got almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
My first real thought, though, was, you know, I don't want to do a straight Q&A with you. We don't want to do that. It's, you know, because every we're at a point where, you know, you're in New York City, and you've been in New York City for a long time now, and so we get together every 3 months or so at an undisclosed location.
The Bilderberg Group. That's what I was trying to think of before.
Yeah.
The Bilderberg Group.
Right. And we meet, and it's the Brain Trust, and we discuss all of, you know, like all the president speaks once a year on the State of the Union, and we get together every couple months and talk
quarterly.
About the state of the universe.
Quarterly.
And the order of the cosmos and things like that.
Yeah.
So anybody out there wondering about the nature of this conversation, you're certainly in good hands.
Well, it's like this conversation's going on for like decades.
Yeah.
You know?
Toilet paper.
And
just keeps unraveling.
We should tell the audience maybe that Michael Lee Nierenberg is best known for his film that was on Netflix for quite a while. Back Issues, the Hustler magazine story. Maybe you saw it. That's who we're talking to.
Yeah.
Like a million people see
it.
That's
a great work, man.
That's what he does. He's
it's all right.
He's a filmmaker.
It's all right. I've seen it.
Music lover.
You lived with it, man. You lived with it. Is it like taking
right.
a shit? Is it like being constipated and taking a shit, and after like the whole movie is just done,
yeah,
and
but
you just exhale, and you're like, I'm done with this at some point?
The difference is after you take a shit, you kind of feel better. After you finish a big project, you feel like, ugh.
There's a whole other
depressed
level of stress.
And you gotta like do your next
what
one.
What leads to the depression? Is it just like postpartum depression?
Yeah,
or is it just kind of like this was your baby and now you're letting it go?
It's not that there's an emptiness, because you're usually thinking while you're doing one about what the next one's going to be, you know? And so.
Or
even
are
when
you dreading dealing with film festivals and doing openings
and
dealing with reviews and just dealing with people and having to show up and
I have a lot of privacy.
Shake hands.
I'm not like a public person, you know,
right.
So I have a lot of privacy, so it's like that corner of show business where you're pretty underground.
Yeah.
And so I mostly just am left alone. I mean, you know, but I like doing this stuff, like, you know, doing stuff like traveling, going to places to where they play it.
Right.
That's fun. You know, it's an adventure.
Yeah.
Does Netflix share, because they notoriously don't share figures with anyone. Do they share figures with like somebody who directed it or self-produced it or even?
I never asked them for figures.
Huh? Would they?
I mean,
I had a deal with
Epix, which is owned by Viacom.
Okay,
and so they had a deal with Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, which is where it lives now, and you know all the places that
is it done on Netflix?
I think so.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it has for some time.
That was just an interesting thing. I always. you always hear about Netflix guarding their viewership numbers.
But I guess if you're the sort of, if you're the sort of like a cash cow director, maybe if you were like really, I don't know anything about their corporate structure, but I imagine they might say, they might tell you something if you asked and you had enough clout, as were. I don't
sure.
know. I don't know what people do. I don't know how people make money.
to anybody that's just joining us in the last few weeks, this may be your first episode, maybe your second episode, but we are a rock and roll based podcast and discussing, dissecting, and analyzing seven decades of rock and roll, looking at its place in the 21st century, and just assessing where it's at. So we can be found, if you're listening to us through YouTube, we can also be found through iTunes. Please, if you're on iTunes, please, by all means, rate and review us. All right? We could use your help and your support. That said, we usually begin each episode with a segment called What's Going On, where we talk about what's going on by way of things that we're discovering or rediscovering, new things going on in the news. And with that, I will turn it over to Stick Nixon.
All right, turn it over to What's Going On to me?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, What's Going On is an open forum. Anything we want to talk about musically. It may be going on publicly or privately. And, okay. A couple things went on this week you mentioned before. Robert Zimmerman is missing in action. Dylan is not around, apparently, bro, to collect his
come and get your award.
He won the Nobel not the Peace Prize, the Nobel Prize for Literature. He won.
What did they expect of him? Like, what are they? What exactly are they waiting for? Like, is there some sort of event where he goes onto a stage and talks in front of a microphone and says
Nobel
thank you or something?
Prize is a big event.
I don't know.
It's got to be an award ceremony.
The only thing I know about that was from a movie. Actually, was. The one in Princeton, the professor in Princeton, and won it for math, and there was a big ceremony. Perfect Mind or a Beautiful Mind?
Yeah,
Beautiful Mind. And it was a big ceremony, and they had a big like a banner on or a badge, and like, you know, it was this big event, and there were all kinds of people rubbing elbows there. So I would imagine it would be similar to that.
It's got to be. And Bob's not shy about accepting awards lately, man. It's numerous times.
It's just a paperweight. I don't want it.
Yeah, you know what? That's what he says.
He loves this shit. He's also very vain.
I think nobody has bought into Dylan's myth more than Dylan himself. And he's just being the Dylan that he thinks that everybody expects him to be.
This is motorcycle accident Dylan. He's playing that card right now.
Self-mythology. Yeah.
Some of these artists and directors and actors and everybody.
That's all
when
it
they
is.
Get up there and I don't want this, I don't want it. Well, what the fuck did you get into it for?
Right.
You just won a fucking Grammy Award. People are thinking your album is great.
Oh, he loves
great,
it. He appreciates it, man. He definitely does. Come out from the fucking woods and collect your award. And when he does it,
say thank you.
When he does it, he's going to do it in the most gracious, eloquent way, man.
That'd be like great. I would love to see that. I would pay to see that. Great.
I'd like to see him lose his shit and actually be a total creep. I think that would be funnier. Let's just alter the narrative a little bit. The Bob Dylan myth, the narrative alters towards the end.
Right.
Maybe we'll get like a real feckless Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
He smashes it over somebody's face if it's an actual award. Chaos breaks out. The building erupts in flames.
He brings a bunch of bikers.
Yeah. Oh, that would be really
calls in the Hell's Angels, man. The timing is interesting because he's not really doing anything now, is he? I mean, he hasn't put out a new product
because he's been playing shows. Like, they're tracking his show. He's here tonight. He's there last night. And there's set lists, so we know he played songs at his concert.
He was just in Brooklyn recently. He was there. The last 4 or 5 months, he was in Brooklyn.
But yeah, 7:30 sharp. He hasn't acknowledged it. But
that's what the ticket said, 7:30 p.m. sharp.
Chuck Berry is coming out with his first new album in something like 36 years.
That's something else, man. And he just turned
90, man.
He's turned 90 this week.
Old. What is this going to be? Is this going to be like a new album of all new songs that sound old?
Is it going to be all old new songs? I hope not.
Is it going to be just re-recorded old songs?
I hope this could be
like Chinese Democracy.
Oof. Yeah.
Overlabored.
Yeah.
Could be.
Uh-huh.
He's probably
been working on it since 1972. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Chuck Berry, but I'm not really that into this. I mean, I don't. That guy could get a Nobel Prize. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Chuck Berry. I think it's what John Lennon said. You could also call rock and roll Chuck Berry.
Sure did.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a great quote.
We just brought that quote up in an episode
that'll be released in a few weeks.
That's two for you.
Double booking on our taping a few weeks back. What else?
I got a cool one, man. It relates to our show, actually. My cousin Aaron just moved to Texas. His family was there before him. He's an Army guy, and he had to wait before he could go down. And he just took the ride down and downloaded all nine. At that point, we had 9 episodes out. He downloaded all 9 podcasts, and for those of you in the know out there, it got him into West Virginia, about a half hour shy of Tennessee, and he listened to all 9.
Wow.
What was really interesting about it is he was texting me as he was driving, and I had to go back into my memory bank and listen to, like, you know, what did I say in episode 1? What did I say in episode 3? And then as he started getting closer, I was like, okay, I remember that a lot better.
Right.
You know, the 66 episode, he had the...
Sergeant Barry Sadler.
Barry Sadler. He pulled the record out and showed me. And he snuck a little corner of that Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction album in there, too. And he kind of, that was a little zing.
Because he loves Guns N' Roses.
You know what? Yeah. His wife really does. You know what's really interesting? Overrated, underrated? He threw a band out there that probably would have, it probably would have lit Facebook on fire. Motorhead, he feels, is overrated. And I was like, whoa.
I think they're right
where it's supposed to be.
And his, you know what his argument? His argument was that
that's true.
If you go to a person who thinks that they're fantastic, they only know 3 or 4 songs. And I kind of disagreed with that too, because I'm only a mild Motorhead fan, but I can name at least 5 or 6 songs by them.
I don't know a soul that has their whole collection and knows their songs in and out. I don't know. You know, I'm sure they're out there.
Oh yeah, there's diehard Motorhead people.
I've never met
that
person.
I know a lot of their records and a lot of their songs. I love that shit.
You like, yeah. You're a fan of Hawkwind too, man.
Yeah, Hawkwind was great, man. Talk about underrated.
That
Hawkwind's
that
crazy underrated.
Hawkwind might be an underrated band.
The only thing I know of Hawkwind is Neil and the Young Ones mentioned them.
And then that's too bad. You should.
Yeah.
You should. They were like those, proto. They were like cyberpunk or something. Yeah. They were like punk before, like, and it was like space punk too. Like, I think that's very cool. And there's some other bands that did that, like Chrome and, like, you know, Helios Creed and stuff like that. That's space punk stuff. You don't see a lot of that now.
Mm. Yeah.
But it was really good. Like, I don't know. People try to do that, and it's too heavy-handed.
Wasn't the first album like a space theme on the cover, man? Was it like...
They were all like that. They had science fiction writers writing the lyrics and the themes and everything.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And the artist that you just turned me on to the other night.
Oh, that's What's Going On, which is Brett Smiley. 1974, this glam record that was recorded by Andrew Lou Goldham. Had...
I'll write it down right now on this napkin.
Yo, you're going to love it because you love that glam shit like I
do. It hit me instantly, man.
Not it's really. Like so accessible and like it came out right on the heels of like of the glam moment. It's like discovering a Mott the Hoople record or something like that. It's like very, very catchy and like very pop. Anyway, it was made in 1974. Oldham recorded it, and then
What's it called?
Shelved by the. It's just called Brett Smiley,
oh, okay.
I think. There's only one. You know, it's not hard to find. I have 2. What's Going On, and then the other is this guy Craig Smith. I discovered who was in a group called the Penny Arcade. Which was like a 60s group that was produced by Mike Nesmith. He kind of put them together. They were like LA guys.
Mm-hmm.
But like it's kind of like a heavier, birdsy sort of thing.
And when's
very
it from?
Groovy.
Is it current, man? Is 60, it something that's...
66.
Okay. Yeah.
It's before.
Magic Gear.
Yeah.
I was talking to our friend Sal yesterday, and I said, I was telling him, yeah, like... You saw the thread, the never ending email chain or the text chain that we all contribute to. And I said last night, we were both talking about how nothing grabs us by the balls anymore in terms of new music. And I said, well, last night I was into this thing that Mike was listening to. I was like, what is this? And I looked into it. I was like, I love this. And then I said, oh, well, figures, it was made in 1973, you know.
Why did he put out one record?
I don't really know. There's some story there. And then he died last year.
Hmm. He died 2 days before David Bowie died. And he was just part of that whole, apparently, just like the whole glam movement, man. When Bowie was putting out Aladdin Sane and Diamond, like it was that period.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he was the one that I guess he just went under the radar. It's a shame.
I love.
He only had one record, and it didn't have a hit on it. So
now, did he just become a recluse, or did he lose his deal? Do you know the backstory?
I didn't really.
On him?
I briefly looked at the backstory. That was only a couple of days ago. I really got into this and sort of forgot to look into it. But yeah. That's what's going on.
Brett Smiley, if you guys love glam, anything related to that early '70s period, if you love Mott the Hoople, especially T Rex, look it up. Hmm. Brett Smiley.
Hmm.
I'll definitely be checking that out.
I may or may not like it. I'm very hit and miss.
Oh, I think you'll love it.
Yeah. Think I love it? Yeah.
Yeah, I know how you do.
I know how I do.
I think the closest to it, that to me, it seems like it's closest to T-Rex. It's very Mark Bolan.
There is. But the arrangements that Oldham had done are huge. Like,
there's a lot more orchestration in guitar.
That's a big selling point.
It's like a show. You get like a real show with the way it sounds.
It's a massive production.
Whatever. I don't want to drag on about it.
But one other thing for the Kate Bush fans out there. I don't know how you guys feel about Kate Bush. I love Kate Bush. Although it's not so much over in recent years. But she's putting out a triple live album from her 2014 shows in London. Now, anybody knows anything about Kate Bush? She did not tour for 30-something years. Her one and only tour was like 1978, I think, 78 or 79. And she did a series of shows just one time, London, Apollo, Hammersmith, Apollo. And she did about 20 or 25 shows. And that was it.
You'll be running out shows. When it comes out.
I'm not going to run out and get it, but it'll be nice to have. You know, it would have been nice to have. That's one of those things where, oh shit, you know, you wish that she did it in New York. You know, because I definitely would have been there for this one show. So yeah,
I discovered her record, The Dreaming, a few months ago. That's when we were on the cover. She has like the key, and it's like a Harry Houdini theme.
Yeah,
and there's the key in her mouth. That record is incredible. That's the only one that ever really like knocked me over.
Mm-hmm. That was probably the most avant-garde thing that she did in terms of breaking the structure of pop songs and just like your physical structure of a song. I think
it was one of the first that was entirely made up with like digital recording techniques.
Yeah, good stuff. So. That leaves us open. Where are we at? What are we doing?
Didn't Kurt Vonnegut get a harkening back? Dylan, for one more second. Wasn't Kurt Vonnegut talking shit about Bob? You said...
Was
he
really?
I heard Kurt Vonnegut said...
I think Kurt Vonnegut is dead, isn't he?
No, he's not.
Is he?
No, he's dead.
He died a couple years ago.
Look it up, Pat.
I'm looking it up right now.
I think you're...
Are you talking about...
Are you talking about
maybe Vonnegut said this in the past. Maybe it wasn't a new quote.
Okay.
I don't know. I heard he said that Bob Dylan is the worst poet that ever was.
Yeah, you might be right. Man, but I don't think he's alive, man. Yeah,
I like that. But I think that's funny.
It's just funny watching the reaction.
I'm a fan.
Not only is he dead, he died in 07.
Long time.
Okay, yeah. I felt like I knew that already.
Favorite book by him. Off the cuff. Favorite book by him.
I can tell you, there's a short story called Harrison Bergeron, which I love, man. I effing love it.
Cat's Cradle was mine without it.
Yeah, mine too. But I never read all of them. I never got that into them.
And Slaughterhouse-Five I enjoyed a lot too. Cat's Cradle was just an amazing book.
Yep. I don't really remember that one at all.
You know what? I read it too, and I don't remember much.
Which one, Slaughterhouse-Five?
Fiction. No, I just fiction in general.
Cat's Cradle. Must have read it 20 years ago. Don't remember much. Such a shame, man.
You look like you're going to die.
I feel like I'm going to die.
I think that's just the early hour.
I'm going to die blues, man.
He's still be hanging up.
Saturday morning, man. You got me out of bed, man.
I don't think he's going to make it through this show.
Really?
I got to bring up an image of you and your Anthrax t-shirt, man.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still a big Anthrax guy?
No, I like those records a lot, you know? I mean, I was a kid, and I did write this article on thrash metal last year. Thank you. And I used my fourth or fifth grade school picture with my Anthrax shirt. 1980. Fantastic.
I'm not even.
88.
I'm 46 and still a big Anthrax guy. I just saw him a few years ago. Still playing great.
I saw them in the early 2000s when they got back together. They were great.
Yeah, still a really good, solid band.
I love early thrash metal. You know, I grew up with it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Mike, you got eclectic taste, man. Like, what genre don't you like? What are you not into? You like a little bit of everything.
I think I do. I like the genres I haven't discovered yet, too, you know? Those weird thrift store ones and all the stuff the kids on drugs do. And, you know, I'm just interested in whatever.
You don't listen to any country music, though, really, do you?
I like old 60s country. Yeah. I like the outlaw country, like Waylon Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Yeah. David Allan Coe and, like, Porter Wagoner. I like that. And I like this sort of, like, Bakersfield sound, like this where it turned into rock and roll.
I get so narrow-minded when it comes to country music. I just put blinders on. I don't know, man. I think I could stand some of that stuff that you were talking about, the outlaw stuff. I can stand, but because they led to, like, the Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrds of the world and stuff like
and
that.
And that's the stuff I don't like. I think, like, when it fuses with rock, I kind of like country and I like rock, but I don't really like them together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, the way I feel about, I love hip-hop and I love heavy metal, and it sounds terrible together. You know, it's like a real contrasty thing. It doesn't, it's like just two colors that don't work together.
We're the two hip-hop guys at this table right now.
You are?
Is that it? Yeah, that's true. I've always loved it, you know.
I did too.
It's coming in and out of my life throughout my whole life.
I was a break dancer back in like 82, and there was crazy shit.
So what's the state of hip hop today then? Is it like rock and roll where the great shit?
I hate Kanye West. I'm sorry.
Me too. I think he's terrible.
Oh, you think he's terrible, dude?
I think he's terrible, but I think hip hop is really great right now.
Yeah.
It still has a place.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the stuff the kids are doing. The young kids are really good, you know. It's the people who are about my age who are boring.
Yeah.
But I still think our generation of hip hop was better.
Yeah.
I
think it skipped mine.
I love the whole...
Have you heard Campaign Speech, Eminem?
I didn't click on it. I saw the link and I didn't click on it. I love Eminem. Man. When that kid hit the scene, Missy Elliott had an interview, and before his first record dropped, said that, look, Dr., you know, and Dre had his whole thing where he was breaking up with Suge Knight, and she basically said, look, Dre's got this thing coming out. This kid Eminem, he's going to be the next. And sure enough, that guy just exploded on the scene, man.
Yeah.
Exploded.
You know, it's rare when someone could rhyme that good and actually becomes mainstream. Oftentimes, when you rhyme really well, you're marginalized.
Mm.
You know, look at MF Doom. Mm. He's one of the greatest MCs we got, and he's, like, pretty considered very underground, very successful of being underground, but you know what I mean. It's like, you know, it's one of those genres where that it's not a meritocracy at all. You know, yeah. I guess none of it is.
I don't know shit about rap or hip hop, man. But I like Eminem. I like him. I don't like the sound of his music. I like the sound of his voice, man. When he fucking, you know, he's just.
You
like,
don't like those Dr. Dre beats?
Dre behind it.
But
too, it's
that's
so
Eminem,
I can see why someone wouldn't
just
like
released
it,
something called Campaign Speech, and it runs for about close to 10 minutes.
That's cool.
And it's just a cappella, man. It's just him and a microphone with some. Sound effects going on in the background. There's really no the rap becomes the beat. Some people may hang me for this, but it really reminded me of Allen Ginsberg's reading of Hal.
He's just so relevant
to its own time, and that's the type of thing that's missing from rock and roll right now. On a level where you can reach
a good thing
mass.
To say. I mean, rock and roll is not putting somebody out there like the next.
And I'm just being totally objective as somebody who can't stand hip hop or rap. And again, maybe there's a lot of stuff that would blow my mind the same way. Maybe it's just because, hey, here's Eminem. It's a headline. And I clicked on it. And I said, whoa, what's this? You know, let me check it out. And about 4 minutes in, I was just like, holy shit. Like, this is like the best spoken word I've heard since Hal.
Hmm.
You know, and again, maybe somebody that's very schooled in hip hop may say, well, that's all right. I don't know. I can't. There's nothing for me to gauge that on.
Who cares?
But you know what? I think it's something that's relevant to today's times. And I was just like, whoa, that's good.
If it sounds good, it is good.
Yeah.
You know, there's no hierarchy of taste.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that.
You're right, though, about the Dre's Beats thing. If it could be because his style is very unique and you could pluck it out and you're like, okay, that's Dre.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everything by Mary J. Blige that you hear that Dre produced, you're like, oh, there's Dre. That's why I like this
I
so
couldn't
much.
Tell you, I couldn't right? tell you if it was him. Like Eminem, I know his voice.
I'm not necessarily a huge Mary J. Blige fan, but when you heard something that he
produced,
she was,
like, there's years,
right
she was on everything. She guessed it on everyone's records in those years.
She's vocally terrific. I she's really good, but it's just not my flavor.
Oh, I like her. I like that first record. A lot. The what's the 411?
Right.
That's a good record.
Family Affair, was that the other one that Dre did?
I don't remember.
There's something on it that
We're alienating.
Yeah, we just kind of shielded.
Nah, man.
I just wanted to throw that hip hop thing out there because it's usually just.
I'm enjoying this.
I spent a little bit of time in one of our episodes talking about it, and how
I'm gonna eat my donut.
That fusion of metal and rock could be the thing that was hurting rock and roll more than anything.
Well, it needed to grow. It needed an experiment. It was a worthy experiment. It needed to be tried. It needed to be done. I thought Public Enemy and Anthrax was actually pretty good compared to everything that came after that.
Yeah,
like everything.
Yeah.
How much of an effect did the popularity of rock or rap have on rock and roll, do you think?
That's a good question. I wonder.
We seem to say it is.
Well, the public taste shifted.
Yeah.
But it's possible it shifted because of the declining quality of rock.
Right.
It ceased to be relevant to young people who could see through all the bullshit. Because at that time when rap was really great, rock was like really, like mainstream rock was really boring. Very corporate. It changed.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stone generation became yuppies.
And the labels and then stopped signing rock artists.
Yeah, and it was probably good. Those old fogies need to just go anyway. Like, it doesn't matter. If they're not relevant, they're not relevant. And I know it's a shitty thing, but it is kind of like that.
Yeah.
So you are conceding that rock and roll is not what it used to be. I thought you'd.
No, rock and roll
is a bone of contention.
No. Rock and roll is fantastic, but contemporary rock and roll is great, and there's so much good stuff being made all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But in as far as its relationship with the public, it's a very different thing than it was when it was peaking. I'd say in the mid '80s, rock kind of like. Or maybe even before that.
Probably before that, right?
Before disco, maybe, because, and I like disco more than rock from that time.
Yeah.
So give us one or two contemporary names in rock that we're really missing out on, if you can, man. Like,
I hate being put on the spot. Like, what do I listen to? Then you have to ask yourself.
That's a tough. Yeah. What am I listening to now? Is always a tough question for us because we listen to so much.
I'm listening to old shit still.
Something else I always wanted to throw. I always say it's gotta be bullshit when you say that, but you said you get into a new artist or a new band every day. I've never heard you say, like, every day I get into something new. I was like, how the fuck does he do that? It's gotta be an exaggeration.
He's listening to something new every day, but not
this morning. I was listening.
You're looking for things.
Yeah, I was listening to,
like, going through what's this.
Oh no, it's true. I listened to Dennis Wilson's one record he made on the way over here. Yeah. I never heard it before, and I listened to a Glenn Branca. Orchestration. It was like with guitars. It was like that was the ambient music I was listening to drown people's voices out in the train so I could read.
And these are things that were new to you that you listened
to. Yeah, they
were
new to me. So I made playlists of them.
So how'd you discover them?
Glenn Branca I knew about, you know, but I'd never heard this one record by him. And I saw it like, I don't know, I must have saw it somewhere, like suggested to me.
Yeah.
And then Dennis Wilson, I was reading that book about Craig Smith and like, and that sort of like mid '60s, the Monkees and like that. And then I was thinking, like, I don't really know Buffalo Springfield very well. So then I went to go listen to that.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was looking at that, something in my head popped up about Terry Melcher and Dennis Wilson.
Right.
And then that's when that's how my mind works. And that's, but then sometimes it's external stimulation,
right?
Like clicking on a link.
Now,
something I never heard of.
You don't stay in one place very long. I mean, how often does it happen where you hear a disc that you love or a record and you play it endlessly for a week or two, man?
I've been listening to Brett Smiley now for days.
Okay.
So, I listen to new things, but then I go back to a few comfortable places and then I make myself uncomfortable again. And I, you know, because it's also an intellectual exercise. It's not completely about music being an emotional exercise. And that I thought that it was very. Once I realized that, it changed my approach to listening to music and made me.
You might have just changed mine. Just that one statement right there. It's a completely different way of looking at it than I've ever.
I'm happy I could help.
Thanks, Doc.
I've told the fellas. I mentioned this on the show. We were talking about you in code, kind of.
We hope you got a laugh.
You called me up.
What are you talking about? I was like, I'm the show's biggest supporter.
It wasn't just. Trust us.
Well, I know that now.
You even gave us a rating, man.
Yeah,
you actually reviewed us.
Yeah, I did. It's what you should.
Yeah, we don't give any of those, man. Where's I going with that? What the hell is my point?
I think we were just talking about how to listen to music or how different people listen to music, you know? I mean, I think that all kinds of people do it in many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I made no bones about this. Even that day, you influenced me in a lot of ways. You got me into a lot of stuff.
You influenced me. Everyone influences me. I listen to all of you.
Yeah. I mean, my musical trajectory was a bit like Mike's. We grew up heavy metal heads, man. It was the 80s.
I was what they called classic rock before the metal, though. I mean, before I got into metal, I was very schooled in the Stones and Led Zeppelin.
You were. You were into the Stones and Led Zeppelin before me. I remember looking at the records in your room and being like, what's that shit?
It was more Eagles, Fleetwood Mac, that 70s lighter shit that my father was listening to, Allman Brothers.
High school, anyway, we're metal heads, man. We love Priest, we love Maiden.
Yeah, I was
still kind of love Kiss.
I grew into that.
Then we did what so many kids did right around 87, 88. the hippie revival happens thanks to Touchy Gray and the Grateful Dead. Everybody starts experimenting a little bit.
The Paisley Underground.
Yeah. And I wore a lot of Paisley. Still do. And bam, we just went in the hippie direction and started digging all that old stuff. Stones, Beatles, Bob, and Bob was not an easy transition. I had to train myself to listen to Bob. I'm used to Rob Halford and electric guitars. I sat there and I want to listen to this, and I want to figure this shit out. There's a reason why everyone talks about this guy, and it wasn't easy.
Me too. It was dropping acid. Once I dropped acid, I went through that too. Later than you, but I went through it.
You're right. It changed a lot. That changed a lot for me. I started experimenting in stuff that I would never have listened to. I was like, whoa.
I don't think I've ever stopped. I think it altered my brain permanently.
Dylan was the beginning of my musical arrogance. Can you say the same thing? With the Dylan, man, it's like the summer of, it was like the summer of like whatever it was, 87, 88, and just going from making that transition from metal, and then I put on bringing it all back home and just kind of like, It made you feel smart, man. It made you feel like intellectual.
That was Sal. That was Sal coming into the picture, being very.
It was an election year.
Yeah.
And all of these things that you thought you grew up to be real, man. And I remember like the last metal album I listened to before I got into Bob was Operation Mindcrime, and just saying, well, what's Jeff Tate talking about, man? 7 years of power, the corporation claw, the rich control the government, the media, the law.
I'm glad you mentioned that, man.
And he's talking about the Reagan administration, and all of a sudden it was like, I was just like, whoa, there's a difference between Republicans and Democrats, and we were made to believe this guy was a hero, he's a cocksucker. It was like all of these things were happening at once. Dylan was like the backdrop of all of that, like listening to Bringing It All Back Home and things like 115th Dream and Maggie's Farm, and just thinking and just like just becoming the most arrogant cocksucker man, about music and everything.
I know you
want to
say something, but I don't want to forget that I think it's terrible when people are grown-ups and still have that arrogance.
Yeah.
Because it's such a stupid-ass place to park your mind.
Right.
It is. Like, it's only rock and roll, man. Lighten up.
Yeah. And it's like, and looking back on that, it's just kind of like, man, and I talked to so many people like that I haven't talked to in years. I'm like, man, we were the most arrogant assholes back then when we were, you guys were. It's like, yeah, did you hear the new whatever, man? That sucks. Somebody would come up to us. You like that? That sucks. We would, like, shoot it the fuck down before like they could even get the band name out of their mouth. Yeah. It's not REM. Yeah. It sucks.
I would at least try something before I said that. I'm not that angry.
No, it was like, no, it sucks. Is it metal? It sucks.
I know.
Yeah, I was like that.
I know, Stick, for you, for sure, you still buy physical media. Mike, I haven't really seen your music collection. And how about you? I mean, this and our guest, Mike. I mean,
it's a hybrid. I mean, it's mostly. I'm trying to get rid of stuff, though. I'm at a place in my life where the books are like, it's so severe that I'm afraid to have anyone over because they think I'm a hoarder. Mm. So I'm not really collecting much right now. I'm trying not to. I'm trying to stay away from the records, but they're usually dollar records, like some weird stuff or old hip hop or something like that. But I had like stuff recorded at the time on analog to play on an analog format. And I think I like contemporary stuff that was recorded on digital equipment to play it digitally. I think that there's a certain fidelity to the time and the period that I think is appropriate. Like, I'm not,
I agree 100% that when I DJed and I would lay a needle on a record, you heard things in those headphones cueing it up that you don't hear on a CD because it wasn't made for that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Michael Jackson's Off the Wall, for instance, it's no secret I DJed in a club that people, a lot of broads danced in. But you heard little ticks and all these little things that were there for a reason. They were, they were produced. Quincy Jones didn't make it. It wasn't an accident that he put something in that record.
Right.
And then he moved on to CD, and some of it lost that. And then it's gotten better again though, because the production value has gotten a lot better for CDs in particular, and now digital media. You know, after that. I still like physical media though. It's interesting to sit there and read the back of an album cover.
There's a part of me that feels like I don't have a piece of music unless it occupies physical space. Like the fact that it's sitting on YouTube isn't good enough. I need to have it. But like, I'm kind of like you, man. I'm sorry, man. Weighed down now by all the physical, the books and the goddamn records. It's just dead weight. I really told myself that I wasn't going to buy any more physical media until I listened to it and knew that I liked it first. But I can't go to any record store and without, oh, it's $2, let me try it. I'm still doing that. So who am I?
It's healthy. It's not terrible. Yeah. You know.
That's why you utilize YouTube. The way that you discover what's this?
I do a lot through YouTube. I find the subscription services like pretty good. I think Spotify. I like the algorithm setup that like what it does is it looks at what you've listened to on Spotify and then makes suggestions based on things you haven't ever played.
Right.
And I think that actually is a really good system for me. But you know, I think it's different for everyone. I still like a nice $2 record. Yeah. And I have a young kid, so I like playing him. He likes, you know, physically taking the record out of his sleeve, putting it on the turntable. Mm. I mean, I could see the joy he gets from doing that. He likes to be, he's like, no, I'll flip it, you know? It's like, cool. It's cool, you know? Yeah. I think that's an experience we had growing up that I don't think should be totally lost.
No. What's he listening to, by the way? Is there something
He's like a Beatles nut, but he's kind of a metalhead.
Wow.
You know? I was playing, the story I like to tell is I was playing him Wagner, trying to open him up, and he's like, can we listen to Scream Bloody Gore by Death after this? A tear welled up in my eye. I'm like, of course, son. Of course, my
loins is blossoming. Yeah. My daughter's in this whole 12-year-old Panic at the Disco phase, and it's not horrible. We discussed it on air before.
I saw them. I was working at NBC on New Year's and watched them warm up. Oh, boy. I had a lot of jokes. I was cracking on them.
I think I might be taking her. They're touring, and I guess they're going to be playing the Garden.
Drug heavily.
Really?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it for her birthday. She was away in Illinois over the summer, and they were playing in Jersey, and it would have been a good opportunity to take her to, you know, I mean, PNC, to just hang out in the grass all night. I could have just sat there and had a few beers and Ubered my way home.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Garden, I could take a train at least. I can maybe have a few cocktails there and take a cab back from the train station. But I, you know, I've turned her on to the stuff that I listen to, and she also, you know, she's starting to expand.
Pop music's good for young people. It's important for them, and I always told my son, be sure to reject anything I put you onto and everything. You got to tear it up and just start again. I think that's what kids need to do, and I think it's important not to be so precious about like your interests and trying to put them onto the next generation. Mm. Kids are smart. They'll figure it out. They'll go through periods where they hate what you like, and I think that's cool. You know?
You're supposed to rebel, right? Yeah, that's the whole idea.
I think it's great. I think they should listen to stuff that pisses you off. You know, I think George Clinton said, if you if it pisses off parents, I like it. And I think that's that's true.
That was one of the first things we talked about. I think in the first time we got together to do this, man, if it didn't piss your parents off, it wasn't relevant.
Yeah.
I know. It's getting harder and harder. The parents are getting more liberal and more like, and, you know, especially if your parents are into weird
stuff. A lot of kids are horrified by their parents doing what they're listening to, man.
It's probably the other way around, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm afraid of that whole next level. I don't know. That's fearful, being a parent in this world. I mean, you know, you look back to our past and, you know, what we did to rebel, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm prepared for it yet.
My nephew's big on the Ramones. My nephew loves the Ramones.
That's visceral.
That's good.
It's visceral. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah.
He dances to it. Is it 10 years? It's been 10 years on that note that CBGB's is gone. I just saw an article about that, and I remember when that was happening, I was going to... Patti Smith did the last show there.
Did they in fact put it, save it and put it back together?
I don't know
Vegas
anything about that. Isn't it going to become like a franchise or some shit like that, man?
It's corny. It's like the Hard Rock
about.
Cafe.
Yeah, it's nothing it's I want to like know about. But I think his family is bringing it to Vegas or something like that.
They should have like the original marquee in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something, though, man.
They do. I, you know, I saw some piece of that there. When Back Issues played in Cleveland, I went. And it was It's like, it's cool to see all that stuff. I think the marquee was there. If it wasn't the marquee out front, it was like another thing from there. I remember, you know, they got a piece of Otis Redding's plane and, you know, stuff like that.
That's
it's
crazy,
cool
man.
To look at, you know, Woody Guthrie's journals. No, I'm sorry, Hank Williams journals. You know, so that stuff is great. But then there's that whole exclusionary idea, too. I'm like, okay, now at the end of it, you're like, all right, now I want to
exclusionary,
find something. Because there's all this contention about who can get in.
Yeah.
And only
it's getting looser and liberal all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's not what I mean.
There's still bands that aren't in that should have been in.
Oh, sure.
Well, the whole thing is silly. Like, the whole concept of it is silly to me. Like, that you can win an award for that, you know, where, like, it just affects people or doesn't, you know? But I think it should just be more like a curated museum instead of a contest, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what if it was more like the Met? And less like the Grammys.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a fantastic idea. Right. I think that might solve the issues that it has.
This induction stuff is bullshit. If you want to have like a whole wing for hip hop, you know, and then all the haters can be like, that's that other wing. It's like, I don't like the Egypt wing in the Met, but it's there if you want to go there.
So as it currently stands, they have hip hop artists mixed in with rock artists.
Yeah, yeah, I
there should be like a hip hop wing. You're right.
There was. There were like displays. There were like displays in the you know, in the different parts of the museum. So the museum gives the impression of, you know, because it is well curated.
Yeah.
Like, they have the wing with the costumes,
right.
You know,
is it set up more like a timeline through history?
No. Well, some parts of it are, and then other parts like will be about a theme, like costumes is when I remember they had like parts of Guar, which I thought was cool. You know, so they have things that are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame itself as a building where things are is cool. The institution of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's important to differentiate between these two when you're talking about it, because it has some really great things.
Yeah, between the institution and the actual museum itself.
Right.
I've been known to bash the place, so that's a good way of looking at it.
I never would have thought of it until I got the opportunity to just go there. You know what I mean? Like, it never occurred to me either. I was just like, oh, who gives a shit?
I mean, you know, that's the other question. Who really wants to just go to Cleveland? You had another reason to be there.
Yeah, I was working.
Okay, let me check it out. Right.
Yeah.
I don't have any other. Maybe to see a ball game or drive through. I'm not going to stay in Cleveland for what?
If you find yourself to, then
I would definitely check it out without a doubt.
A lot of people hate on it. I love the idea of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, though. You know, it's America's greatest art form, man. Let's honor.
It's not that I don't like the idea of it. I really dislike the way that they like Mike said, how they bring artists into it. It's like a contest. And there's bands that, like, fucking Deep Purple. How did Deep Purple have to wait so long to get into this fucking glorified...
And
I don't know.
Like Kiss, too, man.
Yeah,
like
Kiss.
Like, whoever decides who gets in can take their personal grudges.
Yeah.
You know, they might think you're an asshole.
I keep saying it, man, and I can't stress enough that it's just the elite, the Jan Wenner elite. It's made up of people like Jan Wenner and Dave Marsh and John Landau and those guys that just kind of, again,
the
defined
elders.
For an entire baby boom generation and their kids what, and that's us, what rock and roll is and isn't.
Right.
Right? And we accepted it. And if you challenge it, you challenge it. But that is what is controlling what who and what goes into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But are they going to... Are their grip on history is going to loosen with every generation? You know, it's like... Imagine, like, being in the classical era.
Hence hip-hop being more and more accepted.
Right. They're like, this romantic period is going to last forever.
Yeah.
And then, well, I don't know. I don't know the timeline for classical music, but then the next thing comes in, and it's like, it's ill, and then everyone starts bugging.
Because when you have the third rock and roll's third and fourth generations doing the voting, then you're going to start seeing, you know, people making a case for Deep Purple and people, you know, Tom Morello came in and he's like rock's fourth generation.
I think
he made the case for Kiss.
I think you see it in baseball already, not to get off topic, but the Baseball Hall of Fame, the writers put those people through. And a guy like Pete Rose is not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's the all-time hits leader in baseball.
Yeah,
he fucked up. He fucked up big time. Not one drug. He never did steroids, though. And the guy's not.
Imagine keeping the Beatles out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because they use acid on for Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
Oh, that doesn't count, man. They were on acid.
But I think that grip is like you said, John, I just wanted to make the same. They kind of tie together. Is that that generation is changing, and some of those older baseball writers who put these people into the Hall of Fame are either dying off or just not getting votes anymore.
Fuck everyone. It's like with the internet, you'd hope that criticism would just die out too. Like, this whole idea of having someone make up your mind for you is so absurd. You know? And who gets press and who doesn't. I mean, I'm not in that game, but I see it and I am part of the press, so I do see it on the other side. And I still see that the side the other guy sees, that's bullshit. It doesn't matter.
When you're reviewing something, are you saying to yourself, this was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, is almost a two-part question.
I try to make it clear that, A, what I do isn't journalism. I'm totally objective.
Yeah.
I have likes and dislikes, and I don't feel like blogging is journalism. So fuck it.
Right.
You know, so when I it's only because I want to write an essay about what it is that I'm talking about, you know, or whatever. And it's usually not even about the thing. I usually just take it, you know, to someone
else. That's kind of answering what I was going to say, you know, because regarding the bloggers out there, everybody has an opinion. Everybody's writing about it now. Are critics even relevant or even necessary anymore? The era of record reviews and
the argument could be
over.
That's what we are. We're critics,
more or less.
Criticism is an art form too, though.
It is. It's like Lester Bangs and, like, you know, guys like that. There's excellent, important writers who shaped how we look at rock and roll history and music history and all that, but
one of my heroes.
But they shouldn't be taken seriously.
Yeah,
is all. They're just people that, like, we shouldn't be taken seriously, should we?
No,
we're just hanging out here talking about music.
You can take us seriously, but our words are not the gospel truth. You got to find that
exactly.
It's a lot easier to get your voice out there these days because of the internet. It's just anybody can say anything.
And I like that. I think that democracy is important.
I'm cool with that.
It cuts both ways, man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the most idiotic fucking kooks in the world now have a huge audience. You know.
I know, but it's an election year.
Either you listen, either you listen to it, or you just keep moving on.
Speaking of journalism and literature, I'm reading every this book, Michael. Please kill me.
Legs.
You haven't read it yet?
What's that?
Have you?
It's my first time.
Oh man,
Woodbridge Township Library, man. Yeah, they got a good selection of books at the library.
Listener, I'm looking at a copy of Please Kill Me by Legs McNeil. It's excellent. It's a classic. It's like it's the landmark book of the genre, of New York.
Fourth time I've heard that this is the book.
Yeah, it is.
Now that we got this podcast going, I'm boning up on all my shit.
You're gonna discover some good gossip and some good.
You wanted to come on and talk about punk at some point.
Yeah, I figured I've listened to all the shows. You haven't done punk, so I figured I could talk. But I could talk about anything really.
That's where I was going before.
What are your favorite punk bands?
You know what? That's actually one of the easier questions because they're always the first few. First few you discover. For me, that's the Misfits and the Ramones. When you guys were doing Old Cella, I was thinking if I were there, I'd bring up the Misfits reunion in Chicago and the other one in Denver that, like, blew up the internet, you know?
Right.
I keep holding out this idea that they're going to do a surprise Halloween New York show. So I've kept my Halloween plans real light, which is unusual for me because I'm usually triple booked on Halloween.
Are you getting rumblings around that or you just have a
I've just imagined it.
Yeah.
I admittedly am not a huge punk rock fan. I know some about it. I mean, obviously the Ramones, if you don't know the Ramones, you've been living under, you know, in a cave. And the Misfits I happen to know that the two that you mentioned, but outside of that, I'm really...
They're biggies.
Blind.
They're, you know... But
how far did the Misfits go back?
Well, there's the original group is like 70, and they changed a lot, but it was like the core of it was 77, 76 or 77
far,
till
83. Wow.
And then there was nothing, and then Jerry only put them together in the 90s, but it didn't have Glenn Danzig, so it wasn't very good.
Right. You get the credit for that, bro. You totally got me into the Misfits. I love them. I'm a card-carrying fiend, man, and I owe it all to you.
They're just so pop. You know, man. I just love, like, so much of that kind of music, though. I mean, if I could just rattle off the names, but I'm just like, there's just, you know, it's like you have this big puzzle in front of you. Like, which corner do you want to start with, you know? It's, like, almost, like, difficult. I like... I don't know what to do with music sometimes. I'm overwhelmed with things to talk about because it's a hobby for me.
Do you think there are bands that are, I mean, obviously, aside from the Critic Darlings, like, you know, The Clash and The Ramones and that stuff that just should have been in, spoken of in the same sentence, things that I don't even associate with punk, like Patti Smith and Television and and Talking, just because they were part of that CBGB thing.
Well, let's ask ourselves, like, what is punk?
Right. Is there you can't.
I would argue that the Flaming Groovies and like the 60s proto-punk is more punk than say the Patti Smith group.
It's you can't, it's nothing, it's I nothing never, you can answer, but you know it when you see it, or you know it when you hear it or see it.
I never felt that way about Talking Heads. I never really saw them as a punk band.
No,
I would throw a band like MC5.
Yeah, well, because it's regional. That's okay. Very regional, you know? Same thing with Television and all that stuff that later became Yoko, identified with post-punk.
Yoko Ono was more punk than some of the punk that is supposed to be punk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I agree with
that.
Season
of Glass is pretty punk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a funny word, too, because there's some dispute about, like, where it started, and then by the time it went to England, it became another thing.
Right.
People call Blink-182 punk.
I know.
And Green Day. And
So, yeah, overused word, beat to death.
Yeah, and it's, as a point of reference, it's helpful sometimes, but it's not really accurate.
Is there an overlap with punk and post-punk, and it just, like,
I did a drawing of it, like, the size of, like, this wall, where I tried to trace, and it looks like spaghetti.
Yeah.
You know? I like that.
Some of the stuff that I hear that is just kind of like, you know, why isn't this as big as the Ramones or the Clash, man? Or
some,
you know,
it's like, so catchy, like the Lurkers and the Kids. And
this is stuff like I know neither of those.
You know,
I'm talking stuff like Gang of Four.
Yeah.
You know, or Wipers or stuff like that, man. This is like, this is as good, if not better, than I dare say. I like you know, over the edge, man. I can listen to that, and it's just like better than any Ramones album.
I don't think so. I think it's just different.
Yeah, different.
Or like Mission of Burma.
To me, it's more palatable in the sense that the Ramones were so primal, where, you know, like the blues, it's like going back to the blues, where like a blues song is a blues song is a blues song is a blues song, you know? And that's what the Ramones, to me, they just got back to that primal sense of urgency and like just slamming out three chords. And whereas something like Over the Edge is more... It's just more catchy. There's more musical ideas in it.
Like Magazine or something. That's like where there's sort of like punk core, and then it just sort of has turned into a million other things. Like there's like all that stuff that got like where they got into psychedelia, like X, like later X, and the Dream Syndicate, and all that stuff that like went from, because punk, post punk's incredibly fascinating. I don't think it gets spoken about enough. Really, is that it turned into all these other things like goth and industrial, and you know, that Paisley Underground, psychedelia, hardcore. So there's all these different things, and I think all of them have aspects that are compelling to me, and all have like genre records that are defining. That's more interesting to me than punk, in a way, because punk's just, we all know the story. We all know the Rolling Stone corporate narrative of it.
Right.
But post-punk's messy, and I like that. There's a lot more to unearth.
Sloppy is good. Messy and sloppy.
Yeah. Oh, messy and sloppy are excellent. I listened to that damned Machine Gun Etiquette like a week ago. That's an effing great album.
Rock and roll through and through. I mean, that's as good to me as like anything Chuck Berry did. It's the same thing to me. Like, it's just like when you hear rock and roll, that's like, you feel it in your gut.
Mm.
You know rock and roll and you see it.
So let's play a game, man.
Let's play a game.
Who could draw the best kiss makeup?
Let's do the gun to your head game. Gun to your head.
Who's
your favorite band?
Favorite, or if we're doing favorites, right?
Yeah.
Favorite. You can't answer it.
You have a gun to your head. You
Rolling
better
Stones.
Fucking answer it. Your fucking brains will be on the
Beatles. The Beatles. I know. Don't even start. It's true. Because
I'm not starting. We have a saying, because
Mike,
the Beatles.
Mike, you're not going on much of a limb saying the Beatles.
No. Well, that's the thing, and that's what's so funny. That's why it's not an interesting choice. and it's not really reflective of what I like really listen to.
You
want to
choose something you think is cooler than it'd be.
No. It's not about my ego. It's about like what would I want to be stuck with for the like
the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's really what the question is.
Yeah. Well, what's yours, Stick?
You can check my top 40 list. The Rolling Stones.
The Rolling Stones are the only band in my, as far as all my favorites, that sound like the Rolling Stones.
And you say the Stones, too.
So they're the Stones, yeah.
I'll say Steely Dan.
Okay.
Favorite singer, Michael. Gun to your head. Favorite singer.
David Bowie. Yeah. That's just my man. Actually, that's my favorite group.
All right, I'm gonna I'm gonna throw a monkey wrench in this. Do you mean singer, like vocalist?
Yeah.
Singer, voice, favorite voice, or
gun
just
to your head.
Charisma.
Favorite voice.
Oh, it's got to be a voice. It's not like the charisma that comes with a singer.
Now let's make it pure voice.
Pure voice.
Pure voice.
Patti Smith.
I'm gonna say Robert Plant. That guy is just. There's times when that guy was just fucking haunting.
Yeah. I want to do, you know.
I know it's classic and cliche to say it, but
you know me and my lists. I definitely want to do this. Have like your top five or top 10 singers.
Best
show.
I got one. Best metal record of all time.
Screaming for Vengeance.
I knew you were gonna say that.
Black Sabbath.
I knew you were gonna say that.
The Black Sabbath. That's it.
Rain and Blood.
Ooh, that's a good one.
See, I don't have the Slayer gene, man.
Don't hear Slayer on this show often, but that's a fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
When you're in the elevator going down to hell, that's the soundtrack you're going to hear playing. You're not going to hear that happy music. You're going
to
hear that.
Well, you'd be excited to go, too. You'd be like, this is...
Yeah. I'm in. I mean, sign me up.
Yeah. I think that record, I don't know, just it's the great thing about it is it's like Misfits Earth AD. It's like 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. It should all be summed up so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so that's so after you're smashing your face off the wall, you can get to the hospital quick enough to get it stitched back up and go fucking do it again. That's a great pick, man. What was yours?
I'm going to go Hellbent for Leather, Judas Priest.
Two for Priest. Yeah. I guess it's because you guys grew up together. It's like,
yeah, that's
there's
all
a
that
lot,
is.
There's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack.
Let's do one more guitar player.
Oof. Yngwie. No, I'm just
Ronnie Lako.
That's a hard one. I can't
really
answer this.
I can, man. I think
I like different guitars.
Jimmy Page is my favorite
reasons,
guitar
man.
Player.
Right now, today,
very confidently.
Today it's Richard Thompson. Tomorrow could be something else.
Oh, is what Richard Thompson is from?
Linda and Richard Thompson. He's a solo guy, too, and he was in Fairport Convention. But his solo stuff
that's
is
an
really,
interesting show, eh?
Yeah, it's just what I like lately. It's just what I like lately. Yeah. I mean, all time? I don't know, man. I don't even... Jeez, it's too... Gun to the head. I don't know.
Y'all are going to really hate mine.
I give you
what,
four.
Skunk Baxter or something?
Skunk Baxter. Definitely not
Jeff
Skunk.
Beck.
It's definitely not Beck. Skunk.
Jeff Beck,
huh? I'm going to say Eddie Van Halen. Fuck it.
That's a good
or
choice.
Randy Rhoads. Either one of those two guys.
You know what's weird, man? Eddie Van Halen. I was on a Friday. I don't leave work. I sit there. I go on YouTube. I spent like a fucking hour and a half watching old Van Halen clips yesterday. I'm not even into them, dude.
He redefined the instrument. I think if Randy Rhoads had lived, we might be having a completely different discussion.
Well, I think that he would just seem more soulful, but I love those Van Halen videos as short films.
Right.
You know, that's kind of like a different thing. Like, I directed a music video earlier this year, and I was looking at that for reference, and Twisted Sister. They made great videos in Rat. Round and Round, like those videos, I was ripping off to shoot mine.
Yeah,
wow.
I got one
for Pat. The Royal Scam or Asia?
It's the only record that I can listen to over and over and over again.
As a Steely Dan fan,
I'll go
or
with
anybody,
I'll go with the Royal Scam.
I'm gonna go with the Royal Scam.
Yeah,
I prefer that one just a little more. The other one's too produced.
I go with Royal Scam.
Absolutely. Well,
they showed that they kind of overproduced that record in that video that you always see. They're just talking about how they went in, and the bass line had to be this, and then we're going to change it up. The bass guy, he went and did this.
Yeah, I like how controlling he is, though. My favorite Steely Dan record is Countdown to Ecstasy, I think. And I think it's an underrated record out of all their records.
It's a great album cover. I love the album
King
cover.
King of the World. That's a hot song.
That's the one.
That
whole
second side, I remember.
Is Dr. Wu on that album?
No, that's...
Katie Lied.
Katie Lied.
When I was in college, I was really into them.
Low or Heroes?
Heroes.
Really?
I go with Low.
This is like Ride the Lightning or Master Puppets. I don't know. Tomorrow Master might be Puppets. Ride the Lightning.
Tomorrow, you know I said Ride the Lightning. You said Master. Huh?
Yeah. Favorite Bowie songs
like
I love.
They're like, you know, like ride. Just no. Neck and neck, man.
My actually, Lodger's the one Lodger's I prefer out of the three.
I think Sometimes I feel.
I knew you would say Lodger. If I gave you any choice between Low, Heroes, and Lodger, I knew you would say Lodger.
I'd really have a hard time with Lodger and Station to Station.
Station to Station,
yeah,
man.
That's tough.
Because the song Station to Station alone is stronger than mostly everything.
Station to Station, I think, is his greatest album.
In Color, In Black and White, or Heaven Tonight?
In Color.
In Color.
In Color.
No idea. What is it?
Those are Cheap Trick albums. In Color. In Color and Heaven Tonight are my most... it's just like eating chocolate. It's just candy. I don't get sick of it. It's just like...
I could always listen to them. Like those
listened
first
to
three
albums of my life.
Yeah, you put me on to them. Like
the first three Cars albums and the second and third Cheap Trick album.
Yeah, yeah. The second and third Cheap Trick albums. There's something about second and
Trump
third
likes
albums.
Those guys a lot.
The most played albums of my life. They're the ones that I don't... Like, you know where you take stuff off your turntable or whatever, your CD player, put it away for 5 years, you can't listen to it. Every band that I love I've gone through some period where I can't listen to them.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to listen to them.
Yeah, me too.
I love the Doors, but I have not been
That's
able to actually put the Doors on and listen to them in about 25 years.
Right.
Cheap Trick, those the second and third album In Color and Heaven Tonight and the first three Cars albums have been in my rotation nonstop since I was 10 years old. Nonstop. They have transcended every single style that I've listened to, every period of my life where my musical taste has changed. Those five albums.
I think you need to
have
reconsider
remained.
Your gun to the head question.
Okay. What
I
is it?
I think it's Cheap Trick.
Yeah. Of what?
Of the gun to the favorite band to the gun to the head.
For you, brother?
Question for
no,
him.
For him.
Oh. No, because that's here's the thing, though. I don't like Cheap Trick after Dream Police, and they made a lot of. It's like
so did the Stones. The Stones, their Waterloo was.
I can listen to Voodoo Lounge though. I can make a case that Voodoo Lounge is a great album if you take four songs. Mm. See, like, the thing that with that album it suffers from that like 15 song.
No, Mike's right. The
Stones
still make great songs.
That like after the late 80s, that bands
have to play me a good Stone song. I can't think of one after us. Tattoo
like you. Tattoo You is the one that like you know the last album that anybody gave a crap about like the consensus as far as like the majority of people.
Yeah, but, I tried listening to Undercover.
The problem with Voodoo Lounge is that it was that once the technology became available to stuff 15 songs onto a single album just because they had the space to do it, would ruin a lot of otherwise great albums. Like would be great albums got ruined because there's too many songs. And Voodoo Lounge, I think, is one of those albums. It's there are things on it that sound like it came straight off of Aftermath, where they just went back to, you know, otherwise, other than the production.
I got to listen to it
again.
Terrible
Don Was production.
Yeah, yeah. Steel Wheels, man. Stuck Between a Rock and a Hard Place. Don't like that song.
That's corny, yeah.
Nah, Mixed Emotions.
I like Rock and
the
Hard
the only one with Mixed Emotions. Nah,
yeah,
it's just great.
Nothing.
They're making faces at me.
My ears are hurting right now.
They're making faces at me. Dear Radioland.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's where I'm the same way with certain artists, man. It just never went away. I have been listening to my copy of Kiss Alive. A copy of Kiss Hard in Hell is the first one I ever owned. It still sounds amazing. People always talk about how I wore this record out.
I think
that's a myth. I don't think vinyl records ever wear out. Do they wear out? Mine still sound amazing, and it must have spun them up 5,000 times.
I've got
man.
my parents' records.
Wear out the grooves. You know, wear out. They sound better. Yeah. So warm.
I can listen to my Sabbath collection over and over again. It's still in my phone. That's I was more of the heavier 60s stuff, 70s stuff.
Yeah, I like that stuff too, man. That's
and we all kind of agree on some of the stuff. I mean, outside of the Stones, I'm not a big Stones guy, but we all kind of agreed on that we could listen to. And the Cheap Trick stuff you got me on too. I didn't even know the names of those records.
But with Black Sabbath, I've tried to get. I know like a lot of people like Heaven and Hell and the Dio stuff. You might be one of them.
I do. I am one of them.
I like it, but I don't love it. I'm with them up until I like a lot of Never Say Die. And but I think the most slept on underrated one is Sabotage.
Sabotage, yeah.
I'm with you. Sabotage is fantastic.
Sabotage is fantastic. And I think because there's so many psychedelic elements.
There is.
Yeah.
They get really real trippy there, like the writ and all that. Man.
Mm-hmm.
That shit is great.
I like the Mob Rules with Dio.
Do you? Yeah. I like Heaven and Hell a lot. I know it's just an easy out, but man, to hear Dio on that, I'm just like, oh, this is some good shit, man.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, you know, you get that, and then you branch off into the whole Dio era and what Dio did before and where Dio went. And
Rainbow is nice. Yeah, I like Rainbow. I think just the record's called Rainbow.
Yeah, the first one with the fist on it.
Yeah, man.
I think Technical Ecstasy gets too much hate.
No, I'd like to spin it again. I don't really remember it too well. I could use another spin on that one. Because it sounds different as you get older. You
know? Actually, even the one they put out a few years ago that Rick Rubin did.
I could hear Backstreet Kids. I could hear Backstreet Kids on Diary of a Madman.
I mean, it's very, you know, he tried to recapture the, like, you know, that old sound again, I think. But I enjoyed it. It played live well. It did.
Backstreet Kids.
The one, it opens Technical Ecstasy, and I was listening to that recently, and I was like, man, this could fit right in. It doesn't sound like Sabbath. It sounds like it came off of Blizzard of Oz or something.
Oh, okay.
You know, it fits right in with it.
Yeah. Again, there's Randy Rhoads. Yeah. I think I kind of almost prefer, as I get older and the way those albums are aging for me, I'm, like, really preferring Diary of a Madman and Blizzard of Oz maybe, like, twice a year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
My son really likes Ozzy Osbourne, and so, you know.
I think the entire month of May and June, I played nothing but the first three Ozzy albums.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Bark at the Moon, I guess, was the third. That was J.D. Lee's first record.
Yeah.
Or,
I love
was it that record, or was
theory.
It
I love those two
Speak
albums,
of the Devil,
man.
Speak of the Devil was in there as well, when, right after Randy died.
That's the first one. That's my mother bought that for me on the way home from work once.
Speak of the Devil?
Yeah, and she was like, do you have this one? It was a cassette. And, like, this. And I was like, oh,
I can't imagine
my
mother buying me Speak of the Devil.
He had that stage set. He had the midget hanging. It was supposed to be Ronnie James Dio. It was like hanging from a rope in between. Like, the
yeah.
Did he use the same stage set that he used on... for Speak of the Devil, man, that he did on Bark of the Moon? I think he still had that same big eerie staircase in the middle of the stage.
He was a wreck, so I mean, they very well said,
did you
we gotta get out.
Did you read his autobiography?
No, I did not.
Oh my God, it's great.
I didn't even know he wrote
one. It's like The Dirt, like Motley Crue's The Dirt. There's certain books. I usually keep, like I said, a heavy one and a light one going. Sometimes those rock bios are the most perfect thing. If you gotta take a flight somewhere.
Very light reading.
Oh man, it's so good. The Ozzy one, you cannot put it down. It's like got everything you'd want in it. All like the bad behavior.
I'll get it.
When did this come out? Because I wasn't even aware he did an autobiography.
Jeez, he mentions the show The Osbournes in it, so I'm assuming it's within the last 5 years is my guess, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a little longer ago.
Because he could barely talk, man. I was figuring, I can't see him writing.
He must have had help, like a Rats with Sloman type
guy. Like Ace
Frehley
did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Ghost Rider. You spent the summer listening to Ozzy, huh? Is that what you said?
Not the summer. Like, around the time of our first couple episodes.
Yeah.
Do you remember the aborted episode 6? We did an episode 6 that never got released.
Oh, yeah.
How could we forget?
It'll never see the light of day.
Like this one.
No, there was an episode 6 where we did nothing but talk about the shows that we wanted to see over the summer. And half of it was talking about, the guy in Lover, the guitarist of Loverboy's hair. And we spent about 20 minutes talking about his hair, and then we talked about Ozzy's first three albums.
But I mentioned that because, like me, Ozzy came late in life for you. You didn't like Ozzy growing up, though. That must have happened sometime in your 30s.
No, I liked Ozzy around when I was 13. When I first started playing guitar, hell yeah. All I played was Yngwie and Randy Rhoads, man, when I was 13 years old.
You didn't own any Ozzy records back then, did you?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
I want to hear your Yngwie skills. I want
to
hear your Yngwie chops.
Oh, he used to do it.
I used to sweep arpeggios like a motherfucker, but as far as just like my fingers in the last 15 years have just cramped up. You know, those early Live Animals gigs in the late 90s where we'd, you know, I'd play for 3 hours, and after 3 hours, my hand would just be, I would be dying. I can't do it anymore.
I would like
carpal tunnel.
Naming this episode, Sweep Arpeggios.
Sweep Arpeggios.
There you go. We got the name.
That's the name of this.
Sweeping Arpeggios.
Is it Sweeping Arpeggios or Sweep Arpeggios?
Sweeping, maybe, right?
Yeah, Sweeping Arpeggios.
Sweeping Arpeggios.
Yeah.
There it is.
That's the name of our episode.
This episode.
It's worth mentioning. I think we watched this together, man. There's a piece on NPR Radio I was coming in today. It's the 30th anniversary of Heavy Metal Parking Lot. I don't know if they're going to do some kind of retrospective in the city, man.
It plays. But, yeah. It plays. I've seen it around. You know, there's like a lot of really great sort of theater bars that have opened up, like the Nighthawk, where like they serve dinner and drinks.
Right.
And but there's one called Syndicated that's like $3 shows, but they have a bar, you know.
Right.
And so those are the kind of places it comes up in, like this sort of small.
Right. But Heavy Metal Parking Lot, we watched together, man.
We did.
Some
didn't
12.
We?
Yeah, we gathered around it one Friday night. We had a whole party around it. You remember that, right?
Wasn't it amazing what that era looked like?
Yeah, I mean, that's the case they were making today on NPR, man. It's just like a snapshot of a culture. Like, literally, if you want to know what it was like to be a kid in suburban United States.
And we were in one of those parking lots, man, because that was shortly after we saw that. That was a Priest and Dokken concert, the Turbo Tour. And we saw that tour at the Meadowlands very shortly before that movie was filmed. I don't know, what state was it?
Largo, Maryland was the... Park.
So that must have been either the show before us or the show after us, because we're in the same, you know, Philly, New York, you know, usually the Capitol Center.
Right down the line.
Before, yeah.
Worth seeing people out there in a crowd. Heavy Metal Parking Lot. Love it.
Definitely is.
And really going to go see Priest. I don't know how they are now, but when I saw them 12-ish years ago, they were great.
Yeah, don't do it now.
No,
we just discussed that.
That was a discussion recently, man, how poorly Rob Halford is.
You know, I heard it on your show. That's right.
Yeah,
really bad. I saw it was Paul Stanley was in the same breath, because they were at what used to be Castle Donington is now the Download Festival or something over there.
Oh, yeah.
And both of those bands were in it. Who did I say? Was it Muse that I said headlined that? I think it was Muse.
Yeah.
I think it was Muse. And who else was good was Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators with Slash. That dude can sing his ass off, man. I think it was Eddie Trunk that was talking about him jamming with John Paul Jones and Jimmy Page and Jason Bonham, and they were going to do a Zeppelin thing because Plant doesn't want to do it. So they brought Miles in, and he interviewed him about it, and Miles didn't really want to talk too much about it. He kind of backed off of it. But, I mean, that's you got some pipes when they're going to bring you into a room with those three guys. That's all I got to say.
When Axl refuses to show up at the ceremony, he did a great job filling in at the GNR, you know, the acceptance.
Oh, the induction thing. Yeah,
the induction.
Who did?
Miles.
Miles Davis?
Yeah, Kennedy.
Miles
Davis, yeah.
That's a real twist.
That would be a real twist. Tune in for that one.
I mentioned yesterday spending like an hour after work watching the old Van Halen videos, man. You ever see the Jimmy Kimmel footage?
Yeah.
He's spinning the microphone around and David Lee Roth bashes himself in the nose with the microphone.
Yeah, man.
He's pushing blood.
They're out in the street. That was the most... They should have been embarrassed of themselves for that performance.
Speaking of people, that sound terrible, though.
Yeah, Dave really nosedived bad. And I looked up to that band so much because as a kid, man.
I wonder if that's... I mean, like you and I sing a little bit, Pat. You know, are we going to suck, man?
I'm
like 15
years.
You think you're heading that direction? You have that big... You have that power style, man. So.
Yeah, I'm on the south side. I'm on the south side of good. That's no lie, bro. If I was ever good, I am south of that.
You did a pretty good Living Color when I saw you, man.
Alcohol and cigarettes are helping me. They're not helping me at all.
Cult of personality, you do. Lungbuster.
But you know what it always was? One of my vocal heroes was always Jim Morrison. And I loved Eddie, too. I mean, Dave, too. Dave had the charisma of a front man that you wanted to see.
Yeah.
But Jim Morrison had that real deep, like, I was like, oh, I can do that. I can get right. That's right in my wheelhouse.
Right. Yeah, he inspired me too, Jim did, vocally.
Yeah, me too, for karaoke. I think, like, I've always been inspired by the crooner type, like Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Yeah. That's, like, how I fancy myself in karaoke.
You got to come out with us. Make it a point to come out from the city and come to karaoke with us one night, man.
All right, it works the other way, too. You
That's
can come
true.
To the city.
That's a great point, and it would probably be a lot more fun.
We have excellent karaoke.
Are you guys singing tonight?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah, I'll be over there. I'm going to be over there a little late because I'm doing a haunted hayride. I'm going to be one of the scared.
Ah, that's right.
I'm going to be scaring the shit out of little boys and girls in the hood.
If you're in town, man, come on out. Maybe
I'm going to my high school reunion. Yeah. Anything could happen. And I've got a hotel room.
It's that high school reunion or those get-togethers from that school in particular have found themselves at the place we will be at.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Off air, definitely. But occasionally they've found themselves there. I've seen that place packed with people from a reunion. over at that place.
Oh, yeah. I was saying to Mike in the car, man, later at some point, you got to go back and make a movie based on this night.
Called,
man,
High School Reunion.
But you have to do it the way it's got to look like Matt Mann or the Roach.
Oh yeah, like really cheap,
VHS
style.
Because it's just when you said that, man, I was like, I can't picture you. I can't imagine you going to your high school reunion.
We're making one. We're making one now where my son is playing a slasher, like a 5-year-old slasher movie.
Wow,
really low budget, lots of blood.
That's awesome.
It's gonna be something. I feel okay announcing it here on Rock Under Fire. We've been secretly working on it.
Uh huh.
His mother and I were like the best of friends, and we decided that we're gonna write the script together.
Yeah.
So, wow.
She's like a real deal writer. Like, I'm, you know, I dabble. I'm a dilettante.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, you have a major project coming up, which I guess you don't want to talk about at this point. It's still under. Yeah.
No.
That sounds pretty major, though.
Yeah, I got some major things. Yeah. I'll probably be making an announcement.
Awesome. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, this dude is so motivated. It's unbelievable. Like, Sal always says that. He makes us look like we're standing still, man. You know,
because I take speed. I take more speed than you.
Give me some. Yeah. Every time I'm watching TV, I'm like, Mike Nirenberg would never be doing this. Like, watching TV.
I think we need to take him up.
I'm so happy I could feel you bad. Make you feel bad.
We need to take him up on the offer and do karaoke in the city. That's a must. I want to put that in my phone.
Yo, Benny's on Canal Street. That's a spot. That's a spot that got a nice selection, and it's sometimes empty enough where you get your songs up, but there's enough I like for the strangers. I like to, like, croon for the strangers. I don't like the private rooms they do. Like,
yeah, I'm not a big fan of those private rooms either.
It's weird.
I never did karaoke with you, man, but I remember you posting a video singing He's a Rebel. He's a Rebel.
Oh, yeah.
And you're standing on tables, man, screaming in your, like, grandmother's face. Like,
oh, yeah. That was the hotel lobby after a wedding. That may happen tonight. I think there's a bar in the lobby of what used to be the Hilton. I'll text you guys. I'm gonna just really behave really badly.
Good, man. Good.
Alyssa, my baby mama, said, "Enjoy your body. Have fun. Enjoy your body.
You're gonna be a broken man come Sunday morning."
Oh yeah. I kept that day light, like just go home.
So what did you want to say before we're off the air, man? Anything we left out?
Me?
Yeah.
No,
anything,
man.
You need to get out there?
No. I'm just hanging out with my buddies, talking about music. You know, I'm not promoting. I'm not on a.
You're not plugging anything.
I'm not plugging anything. No. I'm not on a junket.
Yeah.
He's got a little man.
You have to look into his work. Anybody out there? Michael Lee Nirenberg. Look him up.
He's got
a great film, a brilliant documentary called Back Issues, The Hustler Magazine Story, 1976.
No, it's just to 1989. We just stopped at the Hustler Magazine Story.
Hustler Magazine Story. It is brilliant,
that one's out,
man.
Very good.
He's got some other major things coming out, as well as a brilliant column in the Huffington Post.
I'll come back when I got a junket. I got to write for a bunch of sites.
Yeah.
Quick question about the documentary, though. It's not on Netflix anymore. Is it on Hulu?
It lives on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, folks.
As well as iTunes and all that other shit. But yeah, I think that's the only subscription service it's living on at this time.
Okay.
But you could always find a BitTorrent on the internet. The BitTorrents are actually really good and clear.
Like the way this guy thinks.
BitTorrent? What the freak are you guys talking about?
Your buddy Todd from Wisconsin doesn't know nothing about no BitTorrents, buddy.
No, I guess not. Neither do I.
It's just movie downloads. It's, you know.
The last time I clicked on something that said BitTorrent, I had my entire system wiped out.
You're not in the know. You are not in the know.
I really
am
not.
I'm just going to shut my mouth at that point, though. I'm going to end up getting myself in trouble.
All right, man. Let's give Mike Nirenberg a round.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for coming here, man.
Thank you for having me. That was fun.
Thanks, everybody. Keep up the good works. Spread the word, word of mouth. Please find us on iTunes. Rate and review us. We appreciate your support.
Rock Under Fire on Facebook, Rock Under Fire on Twitter. We're also on Instagram.
Follow our shit.
Bad news, but only out of me. pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me, bad news.